Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
You would be indeed on this second day of February.
It's February
kind of
already.
Out
How
here
did that
in
happen?
Southern California.
Oh my goodness! I'm not ready for February yet, Michael.
I know.
I need another week of January, man.
But we can. Well, you know, this is going to rain. I think tonight.
That's what they say.
They say it's coming back.
Yep.
You know, when it gets rainy out here or too cold, nobody will shop. You know, at the way across the street, and news headlines. You know, storm watch, too cold to shop in Sherman Oaks. Yeah, very, very, very silly. But we're happy, obviously, all year round. The rest of the time, when it's nice and sunny out here, we're especially happy because of some wonderful guests that we have in the studio today from an amazing show that has just opened in Los Angeles.
That's right, Michael. We saw a raucous, rocking musical at the Pantages Theater, and two of its stars are here with us in studio today.
Let's say hello, a quick hello at least, to Chester Gregory and Allison Samus. How are you guys?
Welcome, guys.
So sweet to do this on a day where they have a show tonight. We appreciate it so much.
I tell you, they work those performers, man.
They do.
You guys are busy all over the place doing good stuff. So that's fantastic.
Well,
obviously, we'll get back to them in just a second,
yes.
Michael. But before we do, I want to know, how was the rest of your week?
You know, it was pretty good. Thanks for asking, Andrew. You know, I am producing this annual, 11th annual musical theater competition called LA's Next Great Stage Star. And we have an amazing crop of young talent that is being introduced to the hierarchy of those who produce and direct and cast and represent actors here in the business of live theater. And it's kind of a launching pad that has helped us in the past 11 years be able to launch 17 careers on Broadway.
Wow.
Now. With a couple of those people in that mix on their third and fourth Broadway shows.
Right.
And 50% of our 200 overall contestants have now been able to quit their day jobs and earn a living in musical theater, whether it's a regional or in on the high seas,
yeah.
or with the great theme parks throughout the world, but they're making a living doing what they like to do.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's very exciting, and we're coming into the home stretch. It's a six-week event, and we're coming into the home stretch to have our finale on the 19th of February. And someone will walk out of there with quite a bit of money in their pocket and professional representation, and you know, it's all uphill from there.
That's great. Well, yeah. Now obviously the 19th is the big culmination of that, but on the 12th you have another round.
Correct? We do. Yes.
And people can get tickets to that by going.
They
to
can
where?
By going to brownpapertickets.com or calling Brown Paper Tickets at 800-838-3006 24/7. They have wonderful customer service representatives, very courteous even at late night hours. So no excuse that you can't buy a ticket.
Nice.
Right?
Well, I like to hear that. I like to hear that. Well, I'm glad it was good, Michael.
Yeah,
what
how
a great
about yours?
Show. It was a good week. Obviously this was a bit of a crazy week. We were recovering from the rain and all kinds of craziness, and the gust of winds at my house in Malibu were insane. I mean, 50 mile an hour gust of wind came by. And
you notice how he slipped in at Malibu?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I don't tell people is it's a lousy little two-bedroom apartment that I have to squeeze me and my nine children into, you know. But it's funny. We're up on a hill, and, man, when you walk outside in the wind, it can knock you over, and my little 8-year-old got toppled by a gust of wind. Yeah.
You're kidding.
No, and so I'm thinking about suing the city of Malibu. How dare they put wind in this city while I'm trying to raise an 8-year-old? But it was funny. You realize how dangerous that is. I mean, my little girl didn't weigh enough to stay on the ground, so she almost pulled a Mary Poppins and flew away.
Really?
She was okay, thank goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't hit anything dangerous, so she was all right. But that was a little bit scary to see. And it was nice to have, you know, a week of cool weather and calm weather with no rain and no wind. So that was a good thing.
And you're a working daddy, so you have a lot of responsibility on your plate.
You know, when we of course, were very kindly invited to the Pantages to see the opening of the show, which was such a fun night, and we're going to dig into that in a minute, but I was coming from a fight job, and I was coming up from Orange County, and I was exhausted and tired and flying to get up there. And I tell you, you can always tell great theater when you walk in from a day in Los Angeles that you want to just close your eyes and go to bed from, and you walk in and you hear that music, and you go, oh, I'm so glad to be here instead of home in my warm bed.
Totally.
So that was a great thing to feel.
Yeah.
Well, now, obviously, we're going to talk to two amazing people here in a minute, but let's go ahead and take a minute and thank our sponsors. Yeah, Michael?
Yeah, good idea. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed.
Wow.
Well, Michael.
Yes.
Our first guest was born in Gary, Indiana, to a steel
There's
mill.
There's a song about that.
Yes, there is a number of songs coming from that beautiful city. So, born to a steel mill worker and a teacher of what grade, Chester? What grade did your
third grade?
Amazing! My goodness! Wow. Our first teacher drew our first guest drew inspiration from his hometown hero Michael Jackson in pursuing his dream of becoming a performer. First, cutting his musical teeth in local talent shows and workshops for young performers, he then attended Emerson School for the Visual and Performing Arts. His perseverance, persistence, and remarkable music talent carried him on from there. He received raves for his portrayal of Jackie Wilson in The Jackie Wilson Story, which led to his Broadway debut as Seaweed in Hairspray. He has since been seen in such productions as Tarzan, Crybaby, Dreamgirls, Sister Act, and many, many more. He has produced and starred in The Eve of Jackie and garnered numerous awards, including the Joseph Jefferson Award and NAACP Theater Award. The Silver Voice performer from the town built on music and steel delivered a solid gold performance as music industry icon Berry Gordy this week at the Pantages Theater in Hollywood, and we are thrilled to have him join us today on the show. Give a big welcome to Chester Gregory.
Yeah. You bring them?
Man, I can say that with all confidence. I've been through Gary, Indiana. That town is a working class town, but what a musical soul it has. It must have been crazy growing up there, yeah?
Yeah, just being from the city where Michael Jackson is from.
Yeah.
So it just gave me endless hope and inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a chance to meet Michael's youngest son, It was very strange because he's a California boy. He definitely grew up here. And you realize that the Jackson 5 struggled doing tours and going to all those little bars. I mean, thank goodness for Motown to give them a home, because they were working hard.
Yeah.
Without a label like that, a lot of artists would have been lost, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
My goodness. It was interesting to see how some of these performers who came out to California, I think Marvin Gaye is another one of them, who had roots here and where Motown became such an important part of what they did. Now, at the opening of this amazing show, Berry Gordy was there in the audience, and I asked you before the show, what's that like to perform for somebody like that while you're playing him on stage? Is that difficult?
it's extremely challenging at first. You know, you want to do your best, and you want to do a great job.
Right.
But I think some of my nervousness was relieved when I actually got a chance to meet Berry Gordy prior to my first audition and everything.
Wow.
A year and a half ago at the L.A. opening, I was a guest of Allison Sims.
And
that's how I was able to see the show. I was at the opening, and I got a chance to meet Berry Gordy. So when I got a chance to audition for him later, which I did not know would happen, those first jitters were relieved.
That's
you
great,
know? And so I was able to just kind of, like, focus on the work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So you met him in Los Angeles, and then a year later you auditioned for him?
I met him in Los Angeles in, that was April, April 30th, and then ended up auditioning for him in October of that same year, and then several auditions later, and then, actually, the audition was in November, and then 4 weeks later, I was in the show.
And you have done the role on Broadway?
No, I did not.
Oh, you did not do the role on Broadway?
No, it was my... I did other shows on Broadway, but not this one.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow. Oh, I did The Return to Broadway.
Yes.
So what happened? So yes.
Yes.
So the tour
the
ran
two
for
week.
6 months, and then we did a run on Broadway in July.
Yes.
All those Broadway appearances, they just, you know, get mixed up.
You see, he can't remember all of them.
Well, I got to tell you, this is an interesting show. I loved watching the show. I told a number of people.
Boy, so did I.
It was the music itself is so powerful, but then the characterizations, obviously an amazing cast. And also, I thought the composition of the show was very well put together. It's not an introspective, in-depth look into every character's life. I mean, we talk about Michael Jackson being from a working town, and that young man had a really difficult life. A musical genius, there's no doubt about it. But I got the sense that Berry Gordy gave him a way to create like he needed to be able to create. And I think his demons were able to be kept in check, and he was able to just focus on the music during his time at Motown. I think he did that for a lot of artists. When you look at the things that weren't covered in the show, like Marvin Gaye's Tumultuous Life and a lot of the performers, you realize that, I mean, I think you could say that Berry Gordy is one of the most influential civil rights leaders of our time through what he did as an entrepreneur and worksman. So that's pretty amazing.
And he also worked with Dr. King.
Of course. And the show does touch on that. Obviously, I don't think you can talk about that time in music without saying, hey, there were a lot of challenges at the time. But it was interesting to watch and see that this show really is about the music. I mean, you walk in there and every song is a stand up and cheer song.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, we were only short of not having lighters in the audience, right? Doing everything.
Things I don't want to be responsible for, burning down the Pantages is like number one. Yes. So.
Yeah, they're probably smart not to let us do that.
Well, it was funny, too. One of my favorite moments was when the young man playing Michael Jackson as a 7-year-old or a 6-year-old came out, CJ, I believe his name, is that correct?
Yeah, he's actually 11.
Well, just like Michael, he must have to lie about his age sometimes, yeah? They always wanted to say, he was just so charismatic.
Yeah.
But he came out on stage, and this young boy didn't sing a note before he got a standing ovation just for being cast as Michael Jackson. And you think, oh, man, what a lucky, and then you think, oh, man, he's got to live up to that. So, and he did, man. He knocked it out of the park, his dancing and his singing. And I think everybody there wanted to take him home. He was so darn cute, too. I have 2 children. I didn't want to. I was like, no, somebody else can take him home. That's right. That was really great to see. And every performer was like that. I thought that everybody had a personal connection to each Motown performer that went up there, and the actors captured that really well.
Well, of course, we've talked about Berry being up on stage on opening night, but so was Smokey Robinson.
That's right.
There.
Yeah. That's
How
right.
was that? That was the first time you'd met him?
No, I actually met Smokey Robinson April 30th, 2015
wow,
at the opening here.
Wow.
Again,
cool.
Because of my wonderful friend Allison and now my partner on stage every night.
That's great. Well, you guys were great together, too. And that's got to be a little bit difficult, too, to keep that chemistry going and that sort of thing. Because, you know, Barry and Diana had some rough patches, some things that were really difficult to deal with. Being such good friends, you got to kind of get at each other a little bit there, too, huh?
I don't know. I have fun every night. It's different. And so, like, you know, however we're feeling that day or whatever color the scene is or show is, we just go and we just, you know, it's just a constant balance of give and take. And, like, our friendship prior to me being here was us, like, singing songs to each other and being silly and, like, making up songs on the spot. And so now we get paid to have fun and do the same kind of things we were doing before.
Now, how did you guys first meet?
We met... Okay, so we met.
Now we got this breaking news here on State of the Arts.
We met
and
at a mutual friend's Christmas party.
Cool.
And she was just about to go into rehearsal for the tour, and then we met again and just kind of like, you know, just kept in contact. She was in Chicago rehearsing a show, and I was in L.A. And we were just like, you know, talking on the phone, laughing and joking, and like, and just came really, really close, really quickly.
That's great. That's great.
So you're friends, or is there a little bit more?
No, we're friends. We're friends.
Okay.
As significant others listen very carefully. Excuse me, now what's going on over there at State of the Arts?
We're friends. We fall in love every night.
I love it. Well, okay, hold on. I need to grab that as a sound bite. That's a great one. I wanted to ask this question. My favorite moment in the show was between you and the character of Marvin Gaye, played by...
Jaren Mews.
He was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, honestly, his vocals were amazing.
Yes, he was.
And what a difficult part to play, because Marvin Gaye was an important transition in musical history, and you have to have a lot of chops to do the songs, but also you have to have acting talent to be able to pull off that that man's life and work. When he goes into "Oh Mercy, Mercy Me," I mean, you're a mirror. You reflect what he's feeling from a different perspective, and as an actor, you both did great jobs as that, but it was strange to watch that and realize that actually happened. That moment where Barry's saying, hey, look, we've got to keep going with what we're doing. And Marvin's going, no, we've got to change the world. And for the first time, I didn't hear that song as a Motown love song. I heard it as a deeply meaningful song.
Yeah.
I thought that was the greatest success of the show. I thought it did a really great job of showing the story behind some of these great pop songs or lighter songs that we looked at and don't always see how much heart goes into them.
Absolutely, yeah. And Jeremy Hughes does a phenomenal job at hitting every one of those bullet points.
Yeah.
And what's also so humbling and is a great honor is that we're retelling Berry Gordy's memories.
Right.
you know, through his own words, as he remembers these conversations with Marvin Gaye, with Michael Jackson, with Diana Ross, with the Supremes, with the Temptations, you know. And so it's, you know, it's grounding every single day.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about his relationship with Diana Ross for a minute, because I think that most people actually perhaps didn't even know that that relationship was going on, yet it's certainly revealed to some extent in the show, and it seems to be, that obviously, we're not going to give everything away there if you haven't heard about it, but
people are going to go on Wikipedia and find it out anyway.
To me, so. Because I've always thought that she... I've met her before and certainly seen her perform in other venues. Has she seen this show?
Really? Not yet. No.
Not on the tour or New York, anywhere?
Oh, she went to the opening night on Broadway.
Oh, okay. Mm. All right. And did she give it her blessing? Or does anyone know?
I wasn't a part of that production.
The original production, like, what, 3 or 4 years ago?
Well, I don't know how she couldn't, because she's...
It's a beautiful portrayal of her. It is a very honest portrayal,
too. I felt she was very much like that, the way that your portrayal is of her. I think that it's very close to who she is as in real life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to watch because...
She's a smart lady, and she's very, very... she knows who she is and what her brand is, and she, you know, was given all of that, it appears, with the help of Berry Gordy, of course,
right.
Who made her the star that she has become for all of her life, and her daughter is in her footsteps, not in that genre necessarily, but certainly...
Musical footsteps, absolutely.
Yeah, doing a great job on television, so...
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when you watch, because you realize that Motown was creating their own mold. There was nothing like that before, and they needed to craft their image, and they needed to define who they were. And you can't get better than a front man of Diana Ross. I mean, boy, what a great face of Motown. I think you say the same thing about Mr. Robinson as well, but it was interesting to watch and go, you had to find those people who were going to step out, and that hurts personal relationships. It always does. I think... It's something that speaks well to all of our personal lives, is that how much focus you put on career versus family is going to have an impact on your life, and finding that balance is what makes you happy in the end. So,
right, exactly.
That's why I try never to be successful. Taking care of business, man.
Such big shoes to fill,
that's
both
true.
Of our guests
that's
in
right.
this particular show.
That's
and
right.
Let's talk about other parts of your career as well before you reach this kind of, you know, monumental role that you're doing now. Is there any role that you would have aspired to do all of your life? That's
I would really love to play The Wiz in The Wiz.
Oh, really?
Did you do a production of The Wiz?
as a child,
I thought I'd seen that list as well. Who did you play in that initially?
I played the Tin Man before, and I played the Scarecrow before.
Very nice. Well, so The Wiz is kind of a dream role for you.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Wow.
So what ever got you started? I mean, we talked about your early life and singing, but when did you know that it was musical theater? I mean, you were...
So to me, like, just being a performing artist is, like, all-encompassed.
Right.
So, like, when I would say, like, around elementary school was when I decided I wanted to be an artist. And so it was everything from being in school plays to being in talent shows to being in singing groups. And then I auditioned before I was accepted in Emerson School for the Visual and Performing Arts. I was turned down 3 times. Hmm. They auditioned, like, in each department, and every department turned me down except the dance department. And then, so I was a dance major all throughout school. And, you know, so it's very interesting when you have these, like, parallels in life, whatever, or when people meet you as a certain way, they say, oh, you know. So in high school, they were like, oh, okay, you're the dancer who can't sing.
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, they were like, oh, you're the singer. You can't dance.
Oh,
you're a
really?
Singer. Yeah.
Wow.
And then when I graduated from college, they did a production of Jesus Christ Superstar, and then auditioned for it, and then they cast me as Jesus, and they were like, oh, you're an actor? What is this? You know, so
wow.
it's like, you know, it's just interesting, like, going through life, you know, if you just remove yourself from listening to stigmas from other people and just, like, believe in
your work.
Heart, you know, it's true.
That's right.
But when did your vocal prowess, you know, take place? I mean, if you were concentrating on dancing, were you also developing your skills as a singer?
So once I got into the Performing Arts High School as a dancer, the music department, they said, no, we accepted you. We don't know why you didn't get into the department. So then I was almost kind of like a double major a little bit, because the person over the music and over the choir was like, okay, yes, you hear his, you know, you're him. He's a tenor. He's what a tenor sounds like. Okay, now Chester, now sing a C. And I was singing a C. He's like, C? You know, that's the note. And so it was very interesting. So, but my other friends who were, like, really, really talented singers, I just really, really studied them and emulated them, and they helped me to, you know, develop my voice. And then I've had probably about like 15 years of vocal training as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, you blew the doors off. At
yeah,
the
you certainly did in that 11 o'clock number that you have in the show.
what
my favorite was in the show.
My favorite was when poor Chester has to come down the aisle and they say, "We want to welcome on the 25th anniversary the greatest mind in musical history, Barry." And everybody stands up and starts clapping for the real Barry Gordy sitting over there. And poor Chester's going, "Well, I'll wait the 20 minutes for the applause and then I'll do my job here." It was great. It was my favorite moments of the show. You handled it great. So
that was unintentional. That moment, I mean, we knew, the audience didn't know, but and then you came.
No, they didn't know. I mean, you have an icon, Barry Gordy.
Everybody's eyes are on.
Yeah, it was, and so when I came up to the stage, and we were like, "This ain't the real Barry."
It was great.
It was fun. So like, I played with that moment.
It was awesome.
You know, and
it
I felt, you know, yeah.
Well done. But it was interesting too, because this is a difficult role to portray. There's a lot of things you have to do.
This is a very difficult track. Yeah.
Harder than Jesus. Yeah. Barry Gordy or Jesus? Which one was harder to play? That's a tough question.
Believe it or not, Barry Gordy. Because in Jesus Christ Superstar, it's an opera, rock opera, so you're singing the whole time.
Yeah. This one has some breaks for you. Yeah,
this one, like, I have to age over the course of 25 years. I go from 29 to 54, and I'm speaking as well as singing. And so, like, I'm using different parts of my voice. And,
your facial hair changes considerably, too.
Yes. So I have a beard and sometimes cuts on my throat here. And so it's like a lot to navigate.
A lot to deal with.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well. This is a show that I really, you know, we do this show, this program, because both Andrew and I are very, very passionate about the arts. We share your passions.
Not me. I do it for the free ice cream.
Okay.
I'll do anything
come to
for
that,
free ice cream.
And we like to deliver the news in a different kind of way. And but there's one thing that's always very consistent that we say is to put down your remote controls, get away from that television, get out of your house, and go see live theater.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because it's life-changing. The performance that you step into a theater to see will never happen that exact way again.
Right.
So you're seeing something that is incredibly unique.
Well, and this when you look at this show, too, this will appeal to musical theater people for sure, but it'll also appeal to people who've never set foot in a musical before, because the Motown music is a part of all of us. There was somebody sitting in the row, too, in front of me who'd said he'd never seen a play before, and this was his first exposure to
awesome.
That.
So, wow. And the Motown music, of course, is a perfect way to introduce people to Motown music,
absolutely.
Young people that have never heard it before, because it's here to stay for the rest of our lives, I hope. But it needs this kind of a vehicle to protect that music and always keep it out there as well.
Yeah, and the Pantages has some great shows coming up, too. Obviously, Hamilton's coming later this year, and you've got 1903 coming up next. So lots of Circus 1903. Yeah, so there's some really interesting things coming up. This is a great one of the many shows to see there this year. Very different from anything else you'll see there this season.
The performance schedule for Motown the Musical is Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Opening night was just this past Tuesday, January 31st, and it is going to be at the Pantages through February 12th. So you have all sorts of opportunities to come and see this extraordinary evening of sheer entertainment, because boy, once the lights go down and that music starts, you just are breathless by
even
the time
before the lights go down here. That orchestra from the first note just sounds great.
Yeah.
Of course, tickets are as low as $35. You can visit Motown the Musical or HollywoodPantages.com, and you can find some great seats there. Take the family out, have a really good time at the show.
Absolutely. And, of course, the box office at the Pantages is open every day, so you can stop in there, too, and hopefully get some great seats for this beautiful piece of theater.
That's right.
So we have an arts calendar, do we,
That's
today?
Right. Chester, would you be so kind as to hang around with us while we talk to Allison, too?
Absolutely.
Thank you, my friend.
Perfect.
Bernadette Peters. Throughout her illustrious career, Peters has dazzled audiences and critics with her performances on stage and television, in concert, and on recordings. One of Broadway's most critically acclaimed performers, Peters has won numerous accolades, including 3 Tony Awards, a Golden Globe, 2 Grammy Awards, 3 Emmy nominations, and has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
And now is your opportunity to see her live on stage at the McCallum Theater for the Performing Arts in beautiful Palm Desert, California, just a couple hours outside, about 90 90 minutes, actually, outside of Los Angeles.
That's right. For one performance only on Saturday, February 4th, Peters will grace the stage as only she can in one of America's most beautiful vacation spots. Just a short drive from Los Angeles, as Michael said, don't miss this rare opportunity to see one of America's most beloved performers.
The McCallum Theater for the Performing Arts is located at 73,000 Fred Waring Drive in Palm Desert, California, and tickets are available
easily by calling 866-899-ARTS. That's 866-899-ARTS.
She is an amazing woman.
Yeah, I think I'm better, but I'm with you. I mean, you know, she's good.
You think you can do better than that?
I saw her in Into the Woods, which I honestly sat there and thought that they'd written the show for her. I mean, it was just, she takes on a character, and she's such a little thing, too. She blows the doors off. Yeah, she's really something to watch. Seeing her live in a solo show would be a treat.
I have had that pleasure here at the Valley Performing Arts Center. She did her concert here.
Wow.
And was extraordinary.
When
and the
that?
Last thing that she said in her concert, this has always stuck with me, was to kiss your loved ones and your animals.
Aww.
Good night.
Well, that must have hit home with you.
Yeah. And then she walked off the stage.
That's great.
Yeah. How sweet is that?
That's
right?
Great. Well, you can tell that she has. She's traveled around that industry. She's played so many different parts, and she's got so many stories that she tells too. I hope some of that's included in this show.
Oh yes, it is. It's a fascinating show, and she's just, you know, she's breathtaking to me. I mean, that's such a woman to me in many respects, you know, on all sorts of different levels. I have always appreciated her beauty and her talent and her spirituality.
Yeah. So. Well, if you're listening right now, guys, go ahead and type in performingartslive.com for our audience member and go check out this show and all the other great things going on in Los Angeles theater right now.
Absolutely. So shall we get into the rest of this program?
All right. Chester's good looking, but now we're talking. Now we're going to bring in the real beauty
really
on the show today, man. I'm ready.
Excuse me. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, was born into a musical household, listening to jazz, bebop, blues, gospel, world music, classical, and funk from an early age. She first sang publicly with church and local choirs, including the celebrated Chicago Children's Choir. Upon deciding to make her passion her career, she was accepted into and graduated from the opera program at University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, and subsequently received her master's in music from New York University, Steinhardt. Her Broadway credits include Book of Mormon and Motown the Musical, where she played Diana Ross. She has toured nationally in The Color Purple as Squeak, and she has appeared elsewhere in Bubbling Brown Sugar, Dreamgirls, and The Wiz. She has collaborated with composer Ted Hearn on his acclaimed work, Katrina Ballads, as well as You're Causing Quite a Disturbance with Erica
Badu.
Say that for me.
Erica Badu.
There you go. She needs to have her name justly said, so thank you for that. And Brooklyn Philharmonic. And she sang with Motown and music legend Stevie Wonder in his Songs in the Key of Life concert in Toronto. She is a self-disciplined musical chameleon, and she is graciously taking a few moments out of her day-to-day to come and join us here on State of the Arts. Please welcome Allison Semmers.
Welcome, Allison. Welcome.
Allison Semmers.
Thank you.
There you go.
Boy, it is great to have you here today.
Obviously,
we're devoting the whole show to this amazing musical, and it deserves it as well. Tell me how you first got started in musical theater. You grew up in, it says, a musical household. Was it your parents who said, hey, listen, this is something you could do as a career? Did you have to find your way differently?
Actually, my mother, when she was pregnant with me, she sang in the church choir and sat next to the organ. So, you know, I felt the vibrations, and they were always playing music at home.
Oh, that's great.
And so it was funny, she said, when I was born and she took me to church, I turned when I heard the organ's voice, because I had been hearing his voice in rehearsals all the time.
And
so
you
recognized him. But, you know, both of my grandmothers played piano and organ. My aunt played cello. My dad played flute, conga, drums. Like, there's just so much music in my family. So when I started singing at the age of 3, like, I was harmonizing with the vacuum cleaner. So my mother said, I need to get this child into a choir soon. June.
You never stood a chance to be an accountant. Music was it, girl. That's right. How funny. That's great.
Thank God for my parents for supporting and encouraging that passion that I had.
That's great.
And that's a very important thing to do, because if you don't have their blessing, then you have difficulties in trying to pursue it. And that's not.
Although churches all across the country now are going to have people switching seats to sit closer to the organ as the pregnant ladies all fight to get their kids a musical theater career. So there was a fight in a church today as three pregnant ladies fought to sit next to the organ. I think that's such a funny thing, because if we don't get exposure to it, and this is one of the things we say on the show about getting your children out to see theater, if you don't take your children to theater now, they grow up and they don't have a chance to get exposed to it later on in life. You have to indoctrinate them very early to that sort of thing. That's great that that happened for you.
Well, it's such a magical experience seeing theater in general, but musical theater, I think, adds a whole nother element to
that
magic. And, to the point where you kind of almost wish that life was like that on a real deal basis every day.
It is for some of us. We just randomly break into song and people on the subway stare at us for a while. So you're right. You wish that you could have that kind of emotion.
It seems that,
kind of
that you can get through life a little bit better that way.
I think it's true. It provides a catharsis. And I think this show is a great example of that. Diana Ross had a challenging life and dealt with a lot of things, as so many performers do. But ultimately, I think she's remembered for that great, I think, two things. Not only her great music, obviously, but also for that moment in the Las Vegas show that you put on in the show, that within the show within the show, where she says, everybody join hands, let's all come. And that was just an audience of people who all took hands and began to sing together.
It was, absolutely.
Great moment.
It's such an iconic end to that particular number in the show, too. And it's so beautifully done, so lit beautifully. It's perfect. It's that famous pose of hers. How much about her did you know before you ever stepped into this part?
Well, I was familiar with her music because my parents grew up with Motown, so they had all the LPs, and I was familiar with the sound. But it really wasn't until the show. When I started listening to In Vogue and Destiny's Child, my mother said, well, actually, listen to the Supremes, because this is the original girl group.
Oh, that's true.
So
wow.
I got that idea. I got the sound of the Supremes in my head then. But it wasn't really until the show that I really dug deeper into who Diana was as a person, as a performer, as a woman, and all these things. And even, I did the tour last year, but Shelley Williams, who was our director this year, really allowed me to dig deeper into who she was as an artist and as a performer. And so I really thank her for challenging us for that. And I also read her autobiography as well, just to understand, the inner workings of what she was going through. Mm-hmm.
Well, I must say on Allison's behalf that your transition from being that young girl in high school to the woman that you became, that you become in the show, was quite flawless.
Oh, thank
you. Seamless. Yeah, seriously. It was interesting. There's such a short amount of time that all of that has to take place, and you have to believe all of those moments, as you're making that character grow.
And unlike Chester, she didn't get any facial hair to help her with the transition.
No,
something
she
to think
did
about.
It was, she has a gorgeous mane of her hair.
That's
her own hair.
Yeah, some great costumes in this show, because it is a period piece. I mean, you're talking, I tell you, some of those scarves, man. The 1970s scarves, man, that'll throw you back in time a little bit. What was the most challenging part of bringing this show to its feet and kind of making it what it's come to be as far as that rehearsal process? Where was the greatest challenge you guys met? Allison?
Well, I would say making it our own. These are real people, so of course we don't want caricatures or imitations. We're not impersonators. And one of the things that the creatives allowed us to do was to, like Chester was saying, find the truth and really just find the essence of those characters, but then have it our interpretation of it. So our creatives were really helpful in making that process manageable.
That's great. Yeah, you got to have a good team around you, no doubt about it.
Well, I think and that also pays homage to the casting process, too. They're putting you in these roles because they recognize something in you that is also in these characters, and they believe enough in you to be able to make that transformation.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, necessarily. I'm sure that there are others who have done the roles, perhaps, and they do it differently than the way you do it. But as you said, if you're allowed the kind of freedom that you are expressing here that your director allowed in this production, I think that that's very important from the director's standpoint. That
absolutely,
they
yeah.
really, because most some directors can be, you know, tyrants and not allow you to change anything in their interpretation of what mm-hmm. they think it should be. I don't believe that, because you as a personality, you as a performer, have to connect with everything that you're doing. And
that's
if
right.
you're not given that leeway, it's not going to be believable on the stage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
And that's the beauty of
working
with Berry Gordy, because he handpicked
right.
all of us. And
wow.
so it's like, okay, thank you for that. And so now, you know, there's something special, because
yeah.
the man who saw something special
exactly.
with Michael Jackson.
It's his life. Right.
It's funny, yeah. I was cut in the audition, actually, because they were dancing first. And I'm a singer more than a dancer. But the director, Charles Randolph Rye, said, wait a minute, no, bring her back in. So I actually... Oh, him, because he saw
Fantastic.
Something in me,
uh-huh.
and
uh-huh.
so I'm grateful for that vision that he saw, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you must be able to
smart.
Dance somewhat, because there's a lot of dancing in the show. That's really the gentleman who led the Commodores. I didn't see his name in the program, but I tell you that.
Louis Jackson.
What is his name, please?
Louis Jackson.
I tell you, what a great. I mean, just an amazing dance ability, and also such an energy. And I think you saw that with so many performers on this stage who just seemed thrilled to be in the show, and that comes through if you like what you're doing, if you enjoy the show you're doing. I think it comes through very, very clearly.
Well, and you know, I guess they would. I don't know if this is true or not, because I've never felt this about Jersey Boys. And we're talking about, you know, people say, oh, it's a jukebox musical.
Right.
It's really so much more than that.
Yeah.
And as is Jersey Boys. The ultimate, if you're going to say a jukebox musical, that's the ultimate one, I would suspect, that's kind of started this sweeping craze of these movies, or excuse me, musicals on Broadway. But it's just like Motown. When you said it earlier, Andrew, when you say Motown, when you say that word, you think of the music
That's
of
right.
Motown. And clearly that is what we appreciate about this show. And some 40 hits, or possibly a little bit more, are...
We do almost 60 songs in the show.
60 songs.
And there's still time for acting scenes in that, too. And it doesn't
Absolutely.
Feel like you're sitting there very long.
Yeah,
so
you don't feel shortchanged with
Not
anything.
At all.
Even
Not
if
at all.
If some, you know, something you're doing is a little bit shorter than something else. But I was very involved in the story. I wanted to, actually, for me, I would like to have known more, but, you know, the music is the thing here.
There's
so.
Three or four other, you're right, you could do a story on Marvin Gaye, you could do a story on just
yeah.
Barry and Diana, you're right, I think that
yeah.
there was a lot more information there. But for people who are going to go see this show, they should know that when they walk in, they're first and foremost going to have a great time. There's an amazing story, and obviously a bunch of lessons in there for us all, too. For instance, I know I've talked to a number of people who Motown was their first exposure to African-American culture,
Absolutely.
And that's so funny for us in this modern age where we have the privilege of debating really intricate points of race relations and difficulties. Motown, at the first basic point of it, when they heard it on the radio, that may have been the first time they ever heard a black performer, and it changed race relations, some very positively and I'm sure some negatively too. But that's not the only thing that you get out of this show. You get obviously personal stories, and that's talked about, but for me, you're going to have a good time. You sit down and you listen to the music and you say, I want to live in the 1960s. I want to go back and do that, because it was such a great time for music and musical creation.
Well, you know, and that's interesting. I don't know how you feel about this, Allison, but you've you know, obviously been raised by a wonderful family who's, you know, totally had your back at, you know, everything that you've done, and so many people don't have that opportunity. And I think about raising children
right.
today, Andrew, such as you're doing. It's
my wife
very,
does it, but I'm there, you know.
Well, you're right. But it's a very different world.
Right.
It's at lightning speed now,
yeah.
and everything is electronic and wireless, and it's different. It's just different, you know. To even the idea of going to church on a Sunday is actually a novelty, I think, you know, in this day and age. To people. I hope it's something that never leaves the planet, because I think we always need to have God in our lives and whatever that means to people, but certainly some spirituality. And, you know, so many of our young people just, you know, taking these odd and strange different paths that I can't even relate to sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but we have to what is in the song from Into the Woods? We have to, children will listen, you know.
Careful what you say, you're right.
What you say.
This was interesting to me because I did get the sense that Berry Gordy had a dimension to him that I'd never seen. And I think a lot of very good businessmen may be subject to that, in that you have to wear a suit, you have to do your job, and you have to put up with a lot of stuff. But underneath that, he wanted to make the world a better place. And I didn't know that before. I mean, I knew he was a good businessman, but watching this portrayal, and I'm sure part of it was your acting, but part of it was also just that time in life that you think, well, he was very successful. You forget that Motown almost collapsed, you know. Yeah. Motown almost fell apart, and there was a social need for it as much as there was an artistic need. Man, I like that, because what it says to me is that people are people no matter where you go, no matter what they look like. You work hard, you do good work, and eventually good things come from that. And man, I can raise children in that world. I can smile and go to work every day, because if you do your job, if you treat people fairly, if you try to do good things come. It was a great moral of this show. Yeah.
Do you mind if I add something? You know,
please.
The thing that drives me the most about being in Motown is it's not just a musical, but what Motown was, and it was a musical movement. And what Berry Gordy mentioned in one of the scenes, how he didn't want it to just be race music, but he wanted it to be all people's music, black music, white music, popular music, and how that music united a society that was so segregated, and there was so much social turmoil. Even when we found out that when King was shot, or when Kennedy was shot in the scenes, how the music created a narrative. It expressed the feelings of society, with Marvin Gaye saying, "What's going on?" You know, it reflected the times, it reflected society. And I really feel like that this musical is really relevant now, especially, you know, in some parts it's this socially it's a little turbulent, and we need this music because it makes us feel good, you know.
Absolutely.
It brings us together, especially with the reach out and touch somebody's hand, or the Jackson 5. People feel good when they hear that music, and people are coming together, and that's the uniting power of music, and that is what I'm passionate about. Being in Motown the most is that power that it had in the 60s and 70s, and what we hope that it's having now as well.
And it's so beautiful that she does this every single night, would reach out and touch somebody's hand. Mm-hmm. So we have people that walk in with all the differences, and then everybody's joining hands. Yeah. It's such a beautiful moment that she...
It is.
She orchestrates
and
every
totally
single
in charge
night.
Of yeah. that moment.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
And it's so important.
It is. We were in St. Louis around the Ferguson trials with the show, and you could physically feel the tension of the audience, because miles away there were all these protests that were happening.
Right.
But looking out into the audience and seeing everyone holding hands, it's such a visual, beautiful experience to be a part of, and to just witness that unity. Even though it sounds cliche, but you know, I feel like if we can do it musically, if we can do it in that moment, it is possible to take it outside of the theater as well. So it's such a powerful moment for me as well.
Well, you know,
witnessing it.
We live. Music is actually, you know, everything about a human being, because we live in beats. You know, our heart beats, and it is music of its own.
Yeah.
And this is the extension of what you're talking about. And humanity has come to a different place these days. And what you're describing happened on opening night and subsequent performances with this show everywhere it plays is a very magical time and a very big reminder of what we need to really be paying attention to.
That's right. Well, I want to real quickly, obviously there's going to be a ton of theater people who want to see this show. It's raking in the awards. It's doing lots of good things. But there's another reason to go see this show, and it's the music that we've been talking so much about here today. Can you guys run down just a few of the great hits, those Motown hits that people are going to know the names of and be singing in their cars while they're listening to Michael and I and you guys here today?
Oh, yeah. Sure. My Girl, My Guy.
That's right.
The Grapevine.
Yeah. What's Going On? Mercy, Mercy Me. To Be Loved, Lonely Teardrops, even though those are Brunswick, but it's fine.
Lonely Teardrops was such a... It was so funny because I left the theater singing a melody that I'd composed in my own tiny little brain about all these amazing songs put together, and I'm sure everybody else did as well.
You were doing a medley, were you?
Yes, I was. I had them all. I would only get through about the first chorus of each song, and then I would just go on to the next one. But it was, I tell you, man, nobody else wanted to hear it, but it was great in my brain. So let's go ahead and tell people how to see this amazing show. It's Motown the Musical at the amazing Pantages Theater here here in historic Hollywood, California. It's on a limited two-week run, January 31st through February 12th, 2017.
And it's Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And individual tickets for Motown the Musical start at $35. That is amazing to see something this extraordinary. So take note of that.
That's right.
And you simply can go to the website, MotownTheMusical.com, to obtain more information and probably a ticket link, or you can certainly go to HollywoodPantages.com for that same opportunity of purchasing your tickets.
Of course, tickets are also available through Ticketmaster, or you can just stop by that beautiful Pantages box office and say hello and grab a ticket for this amazing show.
That's what I like to do when I buy tickets for a theater. I like to go to the theater, talk to the person in the box office.
Yeah.
And buy my seats.
That's right. Yeah. I like to have tickets given to me, but it doesn't happen near as much as it should.
We have come to that moment, Andrew, the kind of signature end of each edition of State of the Art.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Fear sweeps over our guest here on State of the Art.
No pressure. No pressure.
We do something here that we call embarrassing moments, where we talk about something that's happened in your live career that reminds us that whether you're on a high school stage or a Broadway stage, live performances is a unique family. Is there anything that comes to mind for you, Miss Allison?
Oh, my God, there's a few. Oh. But for one, I'll just remember one. I'll share one. It was my Broadway debut with Book of Mormon, and I was a swing. So a swing is basically someone who covers everyone.
Right.
So I show up to the theater. I sit in the dressing room. And maybe that one day I'll be on. So that one day that I was on, I was supposed to enter from wing 2 and walk through the door. But there were two doors. One door was opening right into the wing, right into the curtain, and then there was the actual door on stage.
Oh, no.
So I walked through the door, and the door was opening into the curtain, and I was missing my cue. And then so the two Mormon guys were talking. They were kind of stalling because I was supposed to come out. And I literally just ran on stage, like outside of the door. It was so embarrassing.
How late were you for your cue?
It felt like 10 minutes. In reality, it was probably like maybe 30 seconds.
Allison, that was your Broadway debut?
Yes.
It goes to show that there are great heights you can climb to, even if things don't
yes.
go perfectly. What an amazing story. That's very apocryphal for our people listening. Don't think that just because something goes wrong, there's no chance for your career. Amazing.
Yes.
Oh, Chester, do you have anything for us?
Sure. All right, so this happened about a year ago. I was doing a show where on the eve of Jackie, where I pay tribute to Jackie Wilson, and there's a moment towards the end of the show when I kind of scoot to the edge and I reach out to the audience. And so I was just, you know, really, really excited, and I was scooting and scooting and scooting, and when I got ready to reach, I was already at the edge, and so I fell head first into the pit.
Oh, my gosh.
And so as I was falling, it's very interesting, like, time. Because, like, in emergency situations, your brain slows down time
yeah,
to
does.
Give you a perspective to try to figure out a solution.
That's right.
And even though time was slowed down in my mind, I knew there was no solution.
Right.
So I thought I was just going to die at this point.
Oh, no.
And so I failed. Okay, well, this is it. Okay, I'm dying in a performance. Okay, not bad. Not a bad way
to go
out.
This should be remembered.
This
yeah.
is all happening while I'm falling. Right. I fell, like, about 5 feet. So I fell, landed on my back, and then...
ouch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Better than your head, though.
Yes. And then so I thought, okay, am I paralyzed?
Am I okay?
You
yeah.
know, whatever.
Right.
So... I started to move a little bit. I'm like, okay, all right, I'm alive. And I look up, and at this show, at this performance, Jackie Wilson's son was there, Thor Wilson. And so,
boy, Jackie, you two know how to pick your moments,
I
don't
know.
You, man? I'll tell you.
And so, like how Jackie Wilson died, he collapsed on stage and he went to a. So it brought back so many memories. So he's standing, looking
that, yeah.
over into the pit, sobbing.
Oh, my goodness.
And I look at him like, no, I'm okay, I'm okay.
Right.
And so I plopped up and.
Wow.
And ended the show. And ironically, it happened at the moment right before we mentioned Jackie Wilson's collapse
on
stage.
My
so
goodness.
People that saw the show for the first time thought it was all part of it, yeah.
And everybody backstage is freaking out.
Like, they thought, yeah.
Thank
yeah.
goodness you were okay. Well, now listen, I know you have an album coming out too, Chester. Can you
yeah.
tell us a little about where people can find out more about you?
Yes, I have a website, chestergregory.com, and I'm on all the... you know, all the music networks, Spotify, iTunes, all that stuff under Chester Gregory. And I have a new project that I'm working on with PJ Morton from Maroon 5 and Steve Wallace, a good friend of mine. You know, we've done some music together. And so I'm really excited about this project.
Fantastic. Allison, where can people find out more about you?
I have a website. It's my name, AllisonSims.com. It has a few recordings that I've done and other projects that I will be working on. But right now I'm focusing on the tour right now.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, let's be sure that people get out there and visit you guys. But more importantly, which I'm sure they will do, they need to go see this musical at the Pantages Theater. So, ladies and gentlemen, take a minute, log on, and go find out a little more about this musical. Grab your tickets, and don't miss your chance to see Motown the Musical at the Pantages Theater.
That's right.
MotownMusical.com.
That's right.
Well, I must say, Allison and Chester, thank you so much for being with us today. And I was waiting for this this day to come after Tuesday night.
Right? Yes, that was a lot of fun to sit there. Michael, it was so good to see you again. I'll get to see you again next week,
Yeah, absolutely.
Break legs on Stage Star. People, get out there and go check out Stage Star. See some of these great young performers who are going to be on stage at the Pantages.
Thank you. Hopefully
be on Broadway. Yeah.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, Andrew.
Thank you to our audiences. My name's Andrew David James.
And I'm Michael Sterling. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.